Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here, reporting from our second morning at the International Film Festival here in Rotterdam, joined as I was last time by David Jenkins.
Hey there.
And our third Little White Lies correspondent here, Eleanor Lazic.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So you made it in here yesterday.
Yeah.
Any thoughts about Rotterdam so far? It's chilly out here.
It's very, very cold. I'm very impressed by the ability of the people who live here to just walk around wearing what I think is not enough layers. Mm-hmm. So very intimidated by that, but I've only seen one film so far, so looking forward to seeing a lot more.
What's that film?
It was Claire Oakley's Makeup, so yeah, British film, and it was very interesting.
Just set up Makeup a bit for us, if you can.
So it starts very simple. It's just a story of a girl, I think she's 18 years old and very young, and she's going to Cornwall on a holiday thing when there's like bungalows for people to stay, but it's not the season of holidays, so everything is closed and they're like cleaning all the rooms, but her boyfriend lives there, so she's going to like meet him there because she wants to be with him. She starts to suspect that maybe he's been seeing another woman when she was away, a redhead, because she starts to find red hairs on his clothes. But it's actually like it just becomes something completely sort of different. Like, we're very much inside her head, and we see things that we don't immediately understand, but that are very like evocative of like sensations. It's quite a visceral film, and I really like that. A lot of the time we're not sure what we're seeing and what it means. I do think it might be staying. The film might be confusing for a little bit too long. Like after a while, I was just like, get to the point. But that's like a minor quibble, really, because it's just very striking. Like, I think it's a first feature, and it's just the images. It's not an expensive looking film, but it looks, they really found ways to make so many very creepy images, but not creepy in like a sort of necessary surreal way. It's like all very real things, but like if you just, you know, stay a bit longer on them, and like it's nighttime and there's a weird light coming, then it gets very scary very quickly. And there's also, but it's like a sort of coming of age thing, but very done in a totally different way than anything I've ever seen before. So it's very, very interesting. I can't wait to see what the director does next, because it's like, it's so accomplished already. I think maybe it's trying to do a bit too much, which is absolutely fair. But yeah, I can't wait to see what she does next.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it, yeah, because I think it's like, it's doing something very interesting where it basically tries to wrong-foot the audience into thinking it's one kind of movie, and then turns out it's another kind of movie. And I'm not sure that transition maybe works that well. Like, I think I actually would rather see the first half of the movie, like what we think it is, to the end. I don't know if I like when it changes. Mm-hmm. I would rather stick to the first part because I think it's more interesting. But yeah, what I really like about it is that it's very horny and very scary.
Horny and scary.
You can't really do, yeah, that's what you want movies to do a lot of the time. So yeah, really liked it.
So, Eleanor, you've seen one film so far. Mm-hmm. David, what's our tally? I think we're closing in on, is it 8 or 9 or 10?
Wow.
Oh God, I've lost count. I think we've seen about 8 or 9 so far. I saw 5 yesterday,
yeah,
so it was a big day. Well, 6 if you include the short and the feature that came as a single package.
Anything that you'd want to recommend or highlight from there?
Well, list? I think it might be worth mentioning the film we've just seen this morning, actually, in the wee hours, in an IMAX screen, which was always a treat for a kind of Thai art house film. We went to see a film called Happy Old Year, by director Nawapol Thamrangranarit. Apologies for any translation or pronunciation issues there. But he's a really interesting director. He's done a bunch of films that have come out in the UK, such as 36 and Mary is Happy, Mary is Happy.
And Die Tomorrow was the most recent
Die Tomorrow was the most recent one, which was a really interesting film that kind of looked at the kind of banality of death. And this new film is maybe his sort of least, I guess, art house inclined. It was quite, it almost felt like a kind of film that you could do an English language remake of fairly simply. And you could imagine some big Hollywood actress wanting to play the lead role of Jean, because it's basically a film about that. Imagine someone has taken target practice at Marie Kondo and is hitting her in the head every single time. It's a very convincing film about that is basically tearing apart this idea of the of decluttering and getting rid of your earthly possessions and embracing minimalism, and it just very simply, very convincingly shows this woman who is a minimalist furniture designer who's decided to declutter their very cluttered house slash repair shop slash music school that she lives in with her mother and brother. The estranged father has left the scene, and the sort of enterprise has gone into a bit of disarray at the moment, and there's obviously a lot of depression in the house and need for renewal. And Jean goes on this very initially unsentimental journey of buying bin bags and chucking everything out, and then gradually she starts to think that she might want to reconnect with some of the people who gave her these things, or has is seeing these material objects as tokens and gifts and symbols of things that had happened in her life and her own kind of emotional evolution and upbringing. And for about an hour or 70 minutes I was really I was thinking this was a genuinely great movie, and was just taking no missteps, and it was just hitting so many interesting, bittersweet, emotional beats, and in dropping truth bombs about that kind of that weren't sentimental at all, about the genuine feeling we imbue into these like objects like mixtapes and photographs and things like that. And then kind of in the end in the last half an hour it just suddenly goes quite maudlin, and the sort of springy, slightly ironic tone gives way to, there's a lot of crying and a lot of speech, like lots of kind of people talking to each other and having these long, emotional, slightly dragged out scenes like with one another. And I mean, they're well done and they're effective, but you're kind of like remembering back to like better times earlier on in the film. But it's a hearty recommendation from me.
Yeah,
it's
really, really good. I think that also Nawapol is such a confident filmmaker. It's the way this film looks, the way the camera moves, the framing is fantastic. The lead performance is particularly strong of this woman who has almost curated her entire persona to be as she wants it to be, almost like this Nordic minimalist Marie Kondo type thing. And we see the chinks in that armour come through as she's discovering more about this past that she's repressing. But yeah, perhaps a little bit too simplistic for me, maybe. But I'd say strong recommendation, one of the best things we've seen so far. On the opposite end of the scale in terms of simplicity, I saw a Japanese anime yesterday, very on brand for me, called Children of the Sea. And this is by Ayamu Watanabe, who hasn't really made many features yet. He's worked in the very phenomenally successful Doraemon franchise. But this film's been getting a bit of attention. And how to describe it. It's about a girl on her summer break who goes to the aquarium where her father and mother work, and she finds two boys who are discovered off the coast of the Philippines who are brought up by these mythical sea creatures. So they're sort of, mermaid boys. And she goes on crazy adventures with them, who I'll call her manic fishy dream boys. And for the first half, it's just this knockabout romantic sort of triangle. And they become embroiled in a conspiracy about a potential cosmic event that's brewing in the ocean with a gigantic whale and a meteorite. And in this back half, what has been quite a nice, scratchy, very hand-drawn, textured style all the way through just erupts into what friend of the podcast, Robbie Collins, calls anime meets Terrence Malick, when but this young girl becomes the center of this cosmic event, and it goes at simultaneously microcosmic, macrocosmic, cellular granular level plus galactic level imagery, and you're seeing things that I've certainly not seen in this sort of anime before.
Wow.
And seeing that in a massive screen really was something. And maybe on the whole, it's one crazy, convoluted, emotional trip, but there's a 40-minute segment in the second half that is really something, really quite extraordinary.
Wow.
But the second best thing I think I've seen was, you mentioned this short film we saw before, a film called Slow Machine last night. This is a film called John Was Trying to Contact Aliens, and we'd sat down for the screening forgetting there was a short film in front of it, and it just started up unexpectedly. And it's about this chap called John who dedicated 25, 30 years of his life to trying to contact extraterrestrial life, and his way of doing this was sinking all of his time and money and space in his household, his parents' household, to creating this broadcast pylon that beamed sound waves into space. And he said the best way that he wanted to make contact with aliens was to show the pinnacle of human culture, and that was music, but not commercial music. And it shows him almost, he sounds like, you know, Stuart McConey's Freaky Zone on Six Music, where he's like, and that was Can, we're going to listen to Tangerine Dream now. It's really fascinating, strange, this American life level human interest story stuff. And then it finds emotional depths within his story about being in this remote area, was it North Carolina, being cut off from a community. He was gay and had no way to communicate that with people around him, whilst also very literally trying to make communication with other life. And it's a short 15-minute long film, I think, but really quite profound. So you enjoyed it as well, didn't you?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. It was kind of one of those little note perfect mini docs that you kind of wouldn't really want to take a single frame out of, and at the same time you think, well, it doesn't need to be any longer either, because it just gets across its point so beautifully and succinctly. And, you know, what a find in this character. I mean, it's, as you say, he is the kind of guy who could have been, like, rinsed for a big documentary or a big radio show or something like that. But I think that this is a really lovely example of, like, the form and the subject gelling perfectly. So
I'm really glad we discovered that completely by chance.
Exactly, yes.
I would really strongly recommend John Was Trying to Contact Aliens if it is eventually out on Vimeo or somewhere. But we do have another interview, don't we, to queue up, David. So
indeed.
Can you introduce this interviewee and the film we're talking about?
So, yeah, we caught up with a film called Moving Pictures, Filmmakers and the Art of Cinematography, which is directed by Anne Tran. It's receiving its world premiere at the festival, and it's a film about cinematography, and it's essentially talking head driven doc about where some of the world's leading lights in the art of cinematography have joined together, and they're talking shop about their occupation, and what drives them creatively. And I think it's a really fascinating film about, you know, giving us another vantage on what the job of cinematographer is and how weird and nebulous it is. Sometimes I think we have an idea of what a cinematographer does, but hearing these guys and gals talk, you certainly are, you know, it sort of gives you food for thought in terms of, like, the actual job that they're doing on a movie and the results that they're achieving and how they're achieving them. So this is Anne Tran.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm here with Anne Tran, director of Moving Pictures, Filmmakers and the Art of Cinematography, which is receiving its world premiere at the 49th International Film Festival Rotterdam. Anne, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So this film is a film about cinematography from the perspective of some of the world's greatest living cinematographers. It's kind of incredible that you've managed to amass this amount of talent. Can I start by asking, how did you manage to get all these amazing names involved?
Sure, yeah. I mean, the actual feature film, that kind of came later, but... Aerie, who was the producer of the film, they're a renowned camera company, and they celebrated their 100th anniversary in 2017. And for that, they wanted to make, I guess, a lot of little portraits of different filmmakers who had used their equipment, and kind of, have them talk about how the technology enabled their craft. And so that's how it kind of began. But a lot of us that were behind the project from the very beginning, we were thinking, we are getting all these people. The technology really isn't that interesting. It's really the people and their passions and the inspiration behind them. And so most of our interviews would kind of go that way. And then it was clear people really, they respect the equipment and that enabled them to make amazing movies. But what was the most interesting was them talking about collaboration. People were very generous in sharing mistakes they had made. And so the idea to finally make a feature film kind of came once we had everything. That's how it came about.
But it's fascinating. Like, one of the things that you kind of learn from watching the film is how... I guess nebulous this idea of a cinematographer is, and that everyone seems to have their own interpretation of the job and how far their collaboration extends to towards the director and the lighting and the production design. And that must have been sort of fascinating to meet these people and learn these new definitions.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what's super interesting about working in this medium is everyone is different. There's no one way to get to where you are. Everyone has very different personalities, and working together, like in a film, it's almost like dating, and you have to kind of, meet people and gel with them. And of course, there's lots of collaborations that don't work. But it is kind of being with like a dysfunctional family in a lot of ways, and everyone has their own different quirks and passions and backgrounds that influence their art. So, it was really great to be able to talk to people about that and to be able to share it with audiences. And so, we're really happy to have it here at Rotterdam.
Do you find from talking to these people that there is a kind of collegiate atmosphere between them? Like, do these guys all talk to each other?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are very open. I would say out of a lot of the different crafts, cinematographers are especially good at sharing information with each other and kind of, you know, talking shop. But there are some who are, you know, there's some interesting personalities there that some people aren't like that, and just like with any walk of life. But I would say cinematographers are very, very collegial, very open.
It's amazing that this sort of breadth of talent you've got here, from like people like Roger Deakins and Darius Conji, through to sort of some that many people won't be considered as household names. And I really like the fact that, I guess, the film doesn't just focus on the kind of big Oscar-winning cinematographers, but actually takes more of a kind of global view as well. And was that always the how are you sort of discovering these slightly lesser known people?
Yeah, we really wanted to show like a, you know, the diversity in film, and not only with like internationally, but also like through the generations and people's backgrounds. And so, I mean, I worked as a journalist for quite a bit, like covering cinematography. A lot of us on the team, we're lovers of film, we watch films, and so it really was really fun to look at different regions. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Kiarostami's work, and, you know, let's try and get, you know, Mahmoud Kalari, you know, and that was a really fun part, was I love these films, let's try and get this person, or I know this person is really up and coming and they're going to be a future Oscar nominee, let's get her. And we got Rachel Morrison, you know. So and a lot of these people too, we've been working in film, like I have relationships with a lot of these people through the years, and it was really great to kind of give them the spotlight, where a lot of them, you know, they're behind the camera for a reason and they don't like to have attention. So that was also kind of a challenge, is getting people to open up in front of the camera.
That's fascinating to hear, actually, because like seeing the segment that you include in the film on the Kiarostami film, The Wind Will Carry Us. You watch Kiarostami films, and like you kind of have this impression of he does everything on the film. These are kind of like 100% the vision of a single person, and it's kind of fascinating to sort of hear from one of his collaborators, because you so rarely do. And like, you know, he's not trying to take anything away from Kiarostami, but you know, it's really fascinating to see that like there are these other people involved that we just don't really consider sometimes, like these the auteurists. They kind of believe that the director is the be all and end all. So this is kind of, this film is a really interesting way of not so much pointedly flipping that idea on its head, but you know, just showing you that there are these other people who are doing quite big jobs on these films.
Yeah, it's true. And then it's especially notable like when you have long collaborations, like people who've worked on several films together, and their relationship just visually and through the film, and how that's changed. And we also tried to focus on films that maybe weren't like their most famous film, but maybe it was like their first film or an early film. Just to try and show, I don't know, growth. And a lot of like the bigger films, like everyone's kind of known about them. Just we tried to show just kind of a journey for some people that were more renowned, and then also maybe some people who were at the beginning of their journey.
I mean, one of the other things as well that's really interesting is the memory that these people have. And you know, you're talking to like people like Darius Conji and Vittorio Storaro. Is that how you pronounce that?
Storaro.
Vittorio Storaro. And they've got this kind of immaculate memory of like individual moments and lighting in individual shots, and it's kind of incredible. Just as the film is an example of people's memories of making art as well. I mean, did you have anyone who was like, oh no, I don't remember anything?
Sure, yeah, there were. And yeah, that makes me think about how I can't remember my first interview. But there were, you know, with some of the interviews, there were some people that you did kind of have to guide them a little bit more about what to talk about, or jog their memory. And yeah, there were a lot of times where people were like, I don't remember, that was so long ago. But, you know, a lot of these people, when they work on these films, that's their life. That's the number one thing for months and months on end. That's all they're thinking and breathing. And so it also doesn't surprise me that they can remember such key moments and, like, very, you know, yeah, significant scenes that they were talking about. So.
Last thing, one thing I'd like to mention also is, like, as a film about cinematographers, there is a lot of, you know, it's based around kind of talking head interviews, but they're filmed in this very beautiful way, in this quite sort of silvery, high contrast black and white. Could you talk us a bit about how you got these interviews to look so amazing?
Yeah, well, so, you know, this was commissioned by Arri, and they make cameras, and so it was, like, a huge priority to make this look as good as possible. And then also you have the added pressure that you're filming some of the, you know, world's most celebrated filmmakers, and you really need to make them look good. And Tom Fairman, who was our the head DP who established the look, with Henning Redline, who was our executive producer and also co-director. And we had discussions about, you know, how do we make it stand out? And black and white just has this timeless, very classic look that it was a way to make it kind of distinguish it from other films. There's, you know, Visions of Light and other documentaries, but it was really this kind of timeless quality. And so, yeah, Tom came up with, like, the lighting scheme, and all the crews that were working all over the world, we followed it. And it was different. And we had, you know, so many talented cinematographers that worked on this, a lot of people who've worked on award-winning, Oscar-nominated films. And so everyone brings their own little tweaks to it. But yeah, I'm glad that you really liked the look, because getting, you know, a lot of people in front of the camera who are not used to being in front of the camera and assuring them that they would look good, that was a huge challenge.
Cool. Well, last thing I want to ask you then is, we're in Rotterdam, and you're here until quite near the end, and you're going to be watching a bunch of films. Is there anything you're super excited about?
Yeah, I want to see... Well, I still need to catch up on a lot of things. I saw The Lighthouse, which I live in Vietnam, and so I don't get to see a lot of these art house films. That was interesting. I want to see Krabi, which is a Thai film, and I was just in Krabi, It's kind of like a time travel movie. That is set in this, I don't know, beach town in Thailand. Samigate seems really bananas. A trippy, I don't know, documentary about Sammy Davis Jr. There's a lot more.
Lots on your list to get through.
Yeah, there's a film by Mamadou Dia. It's called Namu. I'm going to butcher the name, but it's a Senegalese film. Uh-huh. And I really want to... I'm really interested in seeing that one.
Well, I hope they turn out well for you.
Thank you.
But, well, Anne, thanks so much for joining us. And, yeah, congratulations on the film, and good luck with the premiere.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that was David talking to Anne Tran, the co-director of Moving Pictures, which is receiving its world premiere today, Saturday, at the International Film Festival Rotterdam. So we're going to go ahead now and probably have another 4 or 5 film day ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Elena, anything you're particularly excited to see today?
There's this sword fighting film by Nakajima Sadao called Love's Twisting Path,
okay.
Which I don't know anything about it, but it's a sword fighting film, and I saw this film called Killing, I think it was in Cannes or something 2 years ago or a year ago, and it was a recent, sword fighting film made obviously very recently, and it was so amazing that now when I see a sword fighting film coming up at a festival, I try to see it, because, like, I think the potential of, like, playing with the genre and, like, the, you know, like a sort of revisionist sword fighting film is always just so exciting to me. And if anything, there's always amazing fights, okay. And, you know, a lot of blood. And I love that stuff. So I'm going to go see that, and hopefully it's good.
Well, that's testament to just how massive the program is here.
It's so
I hadn't
varied.
Seen that, so I've immediately circled it. That sounds right on my street.
There are so many different kinds of films playing here. It's amazing.
Yeah. David, what are you looking forward to today?
Well, I'm looking forward to catching a film that played in Cannes and was quite from what I understand, quite roundly disliked, but from a director whose work I'm really a big fan of, a Spanish director called Albert Serra. He has a film called Liberté here, which is a kind of, from what I understand, a sort of semi-film installation crossover work about... It looks like Renaissance era types dogging in Paris in parks and things like that, so having weird sexual escapades. It feels very apt to see a film like that in Rotterdam because it's the kind of film that they champion. And I know that there are a lot of people sort of, you know, since Cannes who have come and said that this is actually a really amazing movie and it's completely unique. So that's the kind of thing I'm looking to discover.
And for me, it's a discovery for me, but it's not a new film. It's Betty Gordon's Variety, which is a sort of classic of the New York independent film filmmaking community of the 80s, which was recommended to me by a bunch of my friends. And have you seen that film before, David?
I've seen it a long time ago on like a home video format. I can't remember which one, but I'm very excited to revisit because I remember really enjoying it. And I collaborated recently on a book about New York movies with one of our contributors, a guy called Mark Ash, and he wrote a really compelling, interesting subchapter about the movie and its kind of connection to sort of New York lore and the New York landscape. So I'm especially excited to see it again on the back of that.
Oh, so. Me too. Anyway, we'll be back later this week with more reports of what we see and any discoveries as well. Eleanor, David, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Eder, reporting from the International Film Festival in Rotterdam for Truth in Movies, which, as always, is a 7 Digital production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.